According to Luke. Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to Jesus. And the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." So he told them this parable. There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me." So the father divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country. And there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout the country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.'" So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his slaves, "Quickly bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field. And when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called to one of the slaves and asked them what was going on. And the slave replied, "Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has got him back safe and sound." Then the older son became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him, but he answered his father, "Listen, for all these years I have been working like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command, yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours comes back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you kill the fatted calf for him." And the father said to him, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice, because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found." This is the gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. Please be seated. Grace and peace to you from the one true God who creates, redeems, and sustains us this morning and always. Amen. Among all of the parables Jesus uses to teach his listeners about the nature of God, this parable we read this morning about the return of the prodigal son seems to stick the most, doesn't it? Even among the three parables spoken in this chapter alone, the other two that we skip this Sunday, the parable of the lost sheep In the parable of the lost coin, this story of the extravagant welcome to the one who returns is a story we love, isn't it? We return to it over and over and over again. Why do we love it so much? This disgraced son quietly going over his speech, his plea as he walks along the road, only to be met by the exuberance of a father running towards him, surprised, dumbfounded even, never getting the chance to give the great statement of humility and contrition that he'd worked so hard to get just right. And the older brother, right? The older brother who sees this welcome as an affront, a devaluation of all the work, the blood, sweat, and tears he has put into the family's business. And he never got a thank you. He never got a party. Shoot, he wasn't even invited to this one. That's right, he's out in the field and has to hear about it from somebody else. He is so put off, actually, that he won't even acknowledge his place in this family, calling himself a slave and referring to his brother as your son, this son of yours. And the father, the sweet, complicated father, who is likely in some part responsible for the ways in which both of his sons feel distant from his love, this father, faced with two sons who are deeply, deeply unhappy, responds in one case with abundant welcome and love, honoring both the return of the wayward son and also to the steadfast and loyal work of the one who stayed put, celebrating the return of this loser with great generosity and ridiculous abundance, and replying to the complaints of exploitation and neglect of his other son, he simply says, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours." Is it the drama of it that we like so much? Or do we relate to it? Which part do we relate to? And does the part we relate to change given the ever-shifting time and circumstance of our lives? Now, I don't know if I've squandered my inheritance, but I know that I certainly have felt at times like the prodigal son, the loser, unworthy of their parents' love. How many of you have felt to some degree some identification with the prodigal son? Right? Now, though I became a preacher like my dad and his brothers and their dad joining the proverbial family business, right? I can't say that I have been treated like a slave, right? It's a pretty bad idea as the call committee's being installed, right? But there certainly have been times where I have felt a kinship to that elder brother for whom praise has been withheld, recognition of their hard work. How many of you have recognized themselves in that story? Yeah. And boy, these days, does that father ring a bell for me more every day? Which of us facing the hard feelings, the shame or guilt or sorrow in our children, wouldn't throw our arms open wide? How many of us have been in those shoes too? This story has so much in it for us to grab hold of. More than the stories that preceded it. I mean, I'm not and never have been a sheep, I don't think, right? And I've never been an old woman with a handful of coins. I sure as heck don't know anything about mustard seeds, right? This parable, though, says a lot to us. We know what it feels like to feel unworthy. We know what it feels like to feel underappreciated. And we do know what it is like to be overcome with joy and love and generosity at the presence of our children. I'd like to think that Jesus, being the good teacher that he knew a little bit about what he was doing in sharing this story. And it's important to remember the context of his telling of the return of the prodigal son, the who, what, when, where, and why of it all. Who? Well, who is Jesus telling this story to? The Pharisees and the scribes, the religious elite, those who determine how precisely the community of believers should practice their faith and behave in the world. What? What is happening that Jesus is prompted to tell this story? Well, it's right there in verse 2, right? And the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling. It's a great word, grumbling. When were they grumbling? While Jesus, a teacher, rabbi, and religious man, was sitting with tax collectors and sinners, those deemed to be unclean on the outside of the religious community, even the enemy of the people. And where was this happening? Well, we don't get a super clear answer to this, but the remarks of the Pharisees and the scribes tell us what we need to know. This fellow welcomes sinners and does what with them? Eats with them. Jesus, it would seem, has welcomed these no good people to his table. And in doing this, he elevates them to his status and lowers himself to theirs. Why? Why does Jesus tell this story to the Pharisees and scribes and others in earshot while eating with tax collectors and sinners? Why is it important that they hear this message of a father who welcomes and celebrates the return of his wayward, lost, wasteful, and sinful son? And speaks to the hard feelings of his other son with words of love and reclamation? Well, because they need to be reminded of God's constant and consistent work of reconciliation, of God's wide open armed improper welcome to any and all who seek God's love. Now, some of you may know I grew up in sort of an unusual school called Marcy Open School in southeast Minneapolis. And Marcy Open School practiced an approach to education called open education. Now, I won't get into the weeds of all of that, but I will tell you it had kind of a hippie vibe to it, right? This school that I went to. And one of the lasting lessons of many, but one that sticks out to me today as we go through this who, what, when, where, and why of Jesus' telling of this famous parable of the prodigal son, was that each week in our class, each day, we had a news presentation. And in a small group, you were given an article from that day's Star Tribune, and you were tasked with asking these questions and presenting your findings to the group. Who, what, when, where, and why? But most importantly, why should we care? This exercise helped us to think critically and also to recognize how what is happening in the world has meaning for us. So as we ask these questions about Jesus' story and why Jesus chooses this moment, this crowd, to share this story with, we must also ask about ourselves. Why should we care? Well, there are so many ways that we can feel this story in our very bones. There are so many characters to whom we find solidarity, who we can relate to. There is a welcome that we yearn to hear. There is an acknowledgement that we need to feel. There is an abundance of love that we are always ready to give. The members of this screwed up family are all too familiar to us. We see our families there. We see ourselves there. But what about what's happening around this story? What about the reasons Jesus has for telling it? Who are we in that part of the story? Are some of us the unworthy, welcomed to God's table, the cast out, the looked down upon, who now find ourselves dining with God? Or are we the grumblers, looking down our noses at anyone who would welcome such a bunch of bad guys? Are we the ones who know that we are worthy and are therefore suspect of any other claims to that worthiness, especially from those who don't look like, act like, vote like, or pray like we do? Or are we offering that welcome that knows no station or status? Are we following the Lord by spreading our food before those whom others will not feed? When we hear this story, yes, it is easy to find kinship with the characters Jesus describes. And I'm sure that's got something to do with why he tells it the way that he does. But when we hear this story, it is also important that we seek to recognize ourselves in the faces of those Jesus is telling it to. And when we recognize who we are, truly and honestly, whether it hurts us to do so or not, we have to be willing to ask ourselves what we will do next. Will we open our hearts to those who are around us, especially to those we would cast aside or determine to be unworthy or out of place at our table? Or will we grumble instead? Just before we read our gospel text this morning, we sang those beautiful words. That beautiful reminder, nothing in all creation can separate us from the love of God. We loved it so much, we sang it twice, right? Nothing in all creation can separate us from the love of God. It feels good to sing that in this room. It feels good to sing that together. It feels good to see ourselves in that us of that song. But what if we sang it out there? What if we sang it outside the walls of Christ the King to all those non-CTKers, those non-ELCAers, those non-Christians? What if we sang those words to the people who do not belong to that us that we sang about? What if we sang, nothing in all creation can separate you from the love of God? These are important questions, folks. Questions that push us, threaten even at every turn, to change our hearts, to change our words, to change how we interact with the world. Will our hearts be changed? Lord, I hope so. Amen.